Right now, your laptop actually has enough computing power to forge a Renaissance painting.
Oh, easily. Or, compose a totally original symphony.
Yeah, exactly. Or even write a functioning Python application in just seconds. But if you're listening to this, you probably just don't have the keys to the ignition yet.
Most people don't, honestly.
Right. And you already know the paradigm has shifted. Generative AI is everywhere. But there is just this massive gulf between typing a prompt into a web interface and actually, building the architecture
It's a
yourself.
huge leap, but it's totally doable.
Which is why today we are handing you those keys. We're doing a deep dive into a really comprehensive guide called Generative AI Projects for
It's
Beginners.
a great source. Really breaks things down.
It really does.
Yeah.
Our mission today is to extract the absolute best, most actionable nuggets from this guide. We want to chart a clear path for you to build your own Gen AI projects across text, images, code, and audio.
Yeah, moving you from just being a passive consumer to an active creator. Because that transition, it's the most critical leap you can make in tech right now.
Before we get into the weeds, though, maybe we should define the sandbox. Like, what's the difference between traditional AI and generative AI?
Oh, that's foundational. So traditional AI is basically about making predictions or decisions, like looking at an image and deciding, is this a cat or a dog?
Okay, right?
But generative AI doesn't just categorize, it produces entirely original content. It generates the cat image from scratch.
It's making something new, not just sorting data.
Exactly. And the barrier to entry for this has completely evaporated.
Yay.
We are no longer in an era where you need, like, a PhD in math or a massive server farm in your basement.
Which is such a relief. So let's talk about the kitchen setup, so to speak. What do you actually need before you start building?
Well, the prerequisites are surprisingly lightweight. You definitely don't need to be a pro software engineer.
Just a basic grasp of Python.
Yeah, I'm
You're
fine.
not.
Yeah, just basic Python. If you can write a simple loop, like, writing a loop that just prints hello AI five times, you have enough syntax to start.
That's wild. But the source material was super strict about one thing: clean data.
Oh, yeah. Clean data is non-negotiable.
Like it said, if you feed the AI half-finished sentences or random HTML junk, it doesn't see those as errors.
Right, because it just looks at patterns. If you give it garbage, it will mathematically optimize to reproduce your garbage.
So no duplicates, no weird formatting.
Exactly. You want fresh ingredients. Which brings us to the biggest shortcut for beginners: pre-trained models.
Yes, I loved the analogy the guide used for this. It compared pre-trained models to a half-cooked meal.
It's a perfect comparison.
Like, let's unpack this for you guys listening. It's basically like buying a pre-made pizza crust.
Right. You don't have to go out and farm the wheat.
You don't mill the flour, you just get the pre-made crust and
Yeah.
then do the fun part, adding your own custom toppings.
And why this matters is that it completely democratizes AI. Training a model from absolute scratch takes immense time and, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars in computing power.
Which none of us have.
Right. So researchers have already done the heavy lifting. You can just go to places like Hugging Face or use Google Colab, TensorFlow, PyTorch.
These are basically a beginner's best friends.
Absolutely. You just
Okay.
download the crust and start baking.
Okay, so the kitchen is set up. Let's get into the gateway projects, text and code.
These are definitely the best hello world entry points. They require the least computing power, too.
So for text, the guide mentions using models like GPT-2 or DialogGPT to build, say, a story writer or a simple chatbot.
Yeah, those are great to start with.
But it also talks about some advanced options, things like RNNs, LSTMs, and GRUs.
Yeah, sequential networks.
Right. And it gave the example of using those to write in the style of Shakespeare.
Exactly. They process text sequentially, token by token, to keep the context intact.
And it's not just poetry and chats. AI can write code too, which is huge.
Oh, it's a massive confidence booster for beginners.
Right.
Using models like CodeT5 or StarCoder.
Like, it can write a Python factorial calculator for you or autocomplete loops.
And it acts like a personalized tutor.
Yeah, the guide had this great specific example. You paste in an index error, like list index out of range.
Everyone hates that error.
Oh, the worst. But the AI will literally explain that you're trying to access an element in the list that just doesn't exist. It debugs for you.
Which helps you learn Python so much faster.
But okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me, but also a little bit weird.
Okay, hit me.
If I ask the AI to write a poem about the moon, is it actually being creative? Or is it just like acting as a giant superpowered autocomplete based on every single poem it's ever read.
I mean, mechanically speaking, it's the giant autocomplete.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it's not thinking like a human. It doesn't feel inspiration. It's just recognizing and generating sequential patterns.
It just knows that the word silver usually goes near the word moon.
Exactly. It's just math. But the combinations it makes can still be totally novel, even if the process isn't human creativity.
That makes sense. Okay, so text and code are very logical, but humans are sensory creatures.
We like shiny things.
We really do. So let's transition from generating text sequences to visual and auditory experiences, from pixels to melodies.
The image projects are where people usually get really hooked.
Yeah. The guide brings up DALL-E, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion. You can generate these crazy images with just web tools or like a few lines of Python.
Right. The prompt example they gave was a cute puppy astronaut in space.
It is adorable. And you can use this to build an AI art gallery or a logo generator. But the mechanics behind it, it talked about JANs, generative adversarial networks.
JANs are fascinating.
So if I understood this right, there's a generator and a discriminator. It honestly sounds like an art forger and a detective going head to head. Is that actually how it works?
That analogy is spot on. That's exactly how it works.
Oh, awesome.
The generator is the forger making fake images. And the discriminator is the detective trying to figure out if it's real or fake.
And they just keep fighting.
Yeah. This adversarial relationship, this constant fighting, is exactly why AI images have gotten so hyper-realistic so fast. They just push each other to get better.
The guide also mentioned VAEs, variational autoencoders, but we can save the deep math on that. What about sound?
Music generation is huge. You can use Google's Magenta library, which uses those RNNs we talked about, to generate melodies from MIDI files.
Oh, right. And it mentioned text-to-speech and OpenAI Jukebox.
Yeah, you could build like an AI DJ or a simple melody generator.
Which is incredible for, say, indie game developers or YouTubers who need totally original, royalty-free background music.
Oh, absolutely. It's a game changer for asset creation.
Okay, so we can generate text, we can do code, images, sound. Individually, they're amazing. But the natural next step, the ultimate creator mode, is combining them.
Multimodal projects. This is where it gets really fun.
Yeah, this is where it mirrors massive real-world industry applications, like the AI comic book creator.
That's a classic starter project.
You use GPT to write the dialogue, and then you feed those scene descriptions into Stable Diffusion to generate the actual comic panels.
Right, connecting the dots.
And the recipe generator. Think about this. For everyone listening, you could literally take inventory of what's in your fridge right now, like tomatoes, eggs, spinach.
Just whatever you have left over.
Exactly. You feed it into a multimodal AI, and it not only writes the step-by-step recipe, but it generates a picture of what the final dish should look like. That is just wild to me.
It's very cool. But if you want to talk about real-world enterprise skills, we have to talk about the data projects the guide covers.
Data augmentation, right?
Yes. So imagine you only have 100 images of cats.
Not nearly enough to train a model.
Exactly. But with data augmentation, you can programmatically alter those images. Flip them, crop them, change the colors.
And suddenly your 100 cats become 500 cats.
Right. But then there's synthetic data creation. This is generating completely fake data from scratch.
Like the fake eminist handwritten digits the guide mentioned.
Exactly. And this is a highly sought after skill in enterprise machine learning today.
Because of privacy, right. The guide used a healthcare example.
Yeah, think about medical images. Real MRI scans are heavily protected by privacy laws.
IPA and all that.
Right. So hospitals use AI to generate synthetic medical images. They're totally fake, so there are no privacy issues. But they have all the realistic markers needed to train diagnostic AI.
You're just bypassing the privacy bottleneck completely.
Exactly.
Okay, so to make all these enterprise-level concepts actually work on your laptop, the guide says you have to level up. You have to learn fine-tuning and how to get past the roadblocks.
Fine-tuning is basically taking that pre-trained model, our pizza crust, and making it yours.
And there are a few ways to do that. Full model fine-tuning, which sounds expensive.
Very computationally heavy, yeah.
Then there's partial fine-tuning, specifically layer freezing.
That's the sweet spot for beginners. It's way faster and uses less memory.
And prompt-based fine-tuning. But even with the partial stuff, you can hit GPU limits.
Oh, for sure. That's when you jump onto Google Colab to borrow their computing power.
But hardware isn't even the only roadblock. The guide really stresses the danger of overfitting.
Overfitting is a classic trap.
So what does this actually mean for you listening? If you're trying to build, say, a sci-fi story co-writer, If I feed the AI 100 of my own short stories,
Okay.
and then it just starts repeating my exact sentences back to me instead of writing new ones, is that what overfitting looks like?
That is the textbook definition of overfitting.
Ah.
Basically, the AI just memorized your training data instead of actually learning the pattern. It's like memorizing the answer key to a test instead of learning the math.
So how do you fix it?
You ensure you have a clean, really diverse data set, and you test it frequently.
The guide had some great tips for success here. It said start small, like 50 to 200 images or 100 to 500 text examples.
Keep it manageable while you learn the ropes.
And don't fear the weird outputs. If you try to make a dog and it outputs a dog with wings, that isn't a failure.
Not at all. Hitting those errors is the core of the AI learning process.
It means the math is working, you just have to tweak it. And then, importantly, document your work on GitHub.
Always show your work.
Always. Okay, so just to recap the journey we've been on, we started with understanding pre-trained models, our pre-made pizza crusts.
Right.
Then we talked about writing Python code, generating astronaut puppies, and even creating synthetic data.
And remember, every single AI expert working today started with a small, simple, probably broken project.
Exactly. Before we sign off, though, there's a really interesting thread in the source material about synthetic data that I wanted to end on.
Oh, yeah, the recursive loop.
Yeah. So we learned today that you can use AI to generate synthetic data to train other AI models, right? As more beginners and companies do this, we are literally flooding the internet with synthetic text, images, and code.
Tons of it.
So what happens to the future of AI when the data it's learning from is no longer created by humans, but by other AI?
It's a fascinating question. Will it keep getting smarter, or will it slowly just lose touch with reality entirely?
Like a photocopy of a photocopy.
Exactly. It's definitely something to think about as you start building your first project.
It really is. Well, thank you all so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this roadmap helps you get your hands dirty and start building. Go create something weird and wonderful.
Have fun with it.
We'll catch you next time.